I was preparing the sermon that I gave this morning, and my good wife appeared at my side and said, "You will remember you've got the offering sermonette in the afternoon as well." And I just looked at the screen and I thought, "Ah, there's a sermonette." Cut, paste into another page, and that's the sermonette done. It took precisely 2 seconds. So here's the offering sermonette. 1 Kings 18, verse 28, where we were this morning. I missed this bit out deliberately, and nobody spotted it. You see, one of the things that happened with Hezekiah, I think to try him as well, just the same as we have trials, they had trials back then. The Assyrian king, who remember, had just wiped out Israel, and they'd taken over most of the Middle East. They're surrounding Jerusalem, and in verse 28, then Rabshakeh stood and cried with a loud voice to the Jew in the Jews' language and spake, saying, "Hear the word of the great king, the king of Assyria." Now you can imagine this, the walls of Jerusalem and all these soldiers up on the walls. And here's this man down below bellowing out to them in their own language. He wanted the people to hear. It wasn't a question of getting a message to the king. He wanted the people to hear and understand and quake. Because this is how the Assyrians always worked. Blitzkrieg. Thus says the king. This is 2 Kings 18, verse 29. Thus says the king, "Let not Hezekiah deceive you, for he shall not be able to deliver you out of my hand. Neither let Hezekiah make you trust in the Eternal, saying, 'The Lord will surely deliver us,' for this city shall not be delivered into the hands of the king of Assyria." He was mocking them. But you see, he wasn't mocking them. He was mocking the eternal God. That is a very dangerous situation. "Don't listen to Hezekiah," verse 31. "For thus says the king of Assyria, 'Make an agreement with me by a present and come out to me, and then eat you every man of his own vine and his own fig tree, and drink you every one of the waters of his own cistern.'" What he didn't add is, "And be subject to me, and let me wipe all the wealth out of your nation and leave you destitute." In verse 33, he says, "Have any of the gods of the other nations delivered out of the hand of the king of Assyria?" They had taken over all the other cities. "Where are the gods of Hamath and Arpad? Where are the gods of Shepharvaim and Hena and Ivan? Have they delivered Samaria out of my hands? I've taken the whole of Israel captive. What chance do you guys stand in your little walled city? Who are they among all the gods of all the countries that have delivered their country out of mine hand, that the Lord should deliver Jerusalem out of my hand? Give up, you don't stand a chance, guys." But the people held their peace, verse 36, "and answered him not a word, for the king's commandment was saying, 'Answer him not.'" So the people did what they were told. Then came Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah, who was over the household, and Shebna the scribe, and Joah the son of Asaph, the recorder, to Hezekiah, with their clothes rent, and told the king the words. And it came to pass, when the king Hezekiah heard it, that he rent his clothes, and covered himself with sackcloth, and went into the house of the Eternal. Do you see what's happened here, what I said this morning? There was a complete change. Suddenly, they cleaned out the temple, they got themselves right with God, massive problem presents itself, where do they go? They take the problem to God. Not only that, in verse 2, "And he sent Eliakim, which is over the household, and Shebna the scribe, and the elders of the priests, covered with sackcloth, to Isaiah the prophet, the son of Amos." You see, Isaiah, when you read the book of Isaiah, you've got to realize that most of that was written at the time of Hezekiah. That's the time setting. It's sometimes important, if we can get in our minds, who was talking to who and who was saying what. At the same, because you get the idea then of what was in the mind, what was actually happening. But you read Isaiah, keep in mind Hezekiah, and then Manasseh. He actually prophesied partly in the days of Manasseh. And as I said this morning, according to Jewish history, he was chased away by Manasseh and he hid in a hollow tree, and Manasseh had the tree cut in half. That was the end of Isaiah. 2 Kings 19, verse 5. "So the servants of the king came to Isaiah, and Isaiah said to them, 'Thus shall you say to your master, Thus says the Eternal, be not afraid of the words which you have heard, which the servants of the king of Assyria have blasphemed me. You see, not getting at Hezekiah. God saying, they blasphemed me. Behold, I will send a blast upon him, and he shall hear a rumor and shall return to his own land, and I will cause him to fall by the sword in his own land. But in verse 9, again, the Assyrian came back, and he sent messengers again to Hezekiah. He actually sent a letter to Hezekiah, and he more or less repeats the same thing, verse 10. Thus shall you speak to Hezekiah, king of Judah, saying, let not your God in whom you trusted deceive you, saying, Jerusalem shall not be delivered into the hand of the king of Assyria. Behold, thou hast heard what the kings of Assyria have done in all lands by destroying them utterly. Shall you be delivered? I've wiped out all the nations around you that are all subject to me, even Israel, the northern tribes, all gone, out of the land. What chance do you stand in your little puny city with your stone walls and your temple? He says, where is the God of Hamath and the kings of Arphad and the kings of the city of Sepharvaim, of Hena and of Ivan? And Hezekiah received the letter of the hand of the messengers and read it, and he went into the house of the Lord and spread the letter before the Eternal. He took the letter in and he put it on the altar. And Hezekiah prayed before the Eternal and said, O Lord God of Israel, which dwells between the cherubims, you are the God, even you alone, of all the kingdoms of the earth. You have made heaven and earth. So he acknowledges the fact that God is the great creator of all things. Verse 16, Lord, bow down your ear and hear. Open, Lord, open your eyes and see. Hear the words of Sennacherib, which hath sent him to reproach the living God. You see, he's not saying, I'm in trouble, help me. He's saying, this man has dared to come here and insult you. Puts a different salam tonight, doesn't it? Remember, Isaiah had already told him this wasn't going to happen. This king was going to run away. He says, of a truth, the Lord, the kings of Assyria have destroyed the nations and their lands and have cast their gods in the fire, for they were no gods, but the work of man's hand, wood and stone. Therefore, they have destroyed them. Now, therefore, O Lord our God, I beseech you, save you us out of his hand, that all the kingdoms of the earth may know that you are the eternal God, even you only. You see, there's tremendous confidence in that, isn't there? He's actually basically going to God as if God's already done it. And to do it, basically, to show that he is God and that he is all-powerful. And then in verse 20, then Isaiah the son of Amos sent to Hezekiah saying, thus says the eternal God of Israel, that which you have prayed me against Sennacherib, king of Assyria, I have heard. Therefore, says the eternal, concerning the king of Assyria, he shall not come into this city, nor shoot an arrow there, nor come up before it with a shield, nor even cast a bank against it. But by the way he came, by the way shall he return, and he shall not come into this city, says the eternal. You see, it was the Babylonians that finally took Judah captive, not the Assyrians. He says, for I will defend this city to save it for my own sake and my servant David's sake. Now, is that not an accolade for David? For David's sake, I will save this city. And what were they doing when they got back on track? It was the words of David that they were using. And it came to pass that night, a scripture that has always made me smile, that the angel of the Eternal went out and smote in the camp of the Assyrians 185,000, 185,000 men. And when they arose early in the morning, behold, they were all dead corpses. I like that. Old English. So Sennacherib the king departed and went and returned to dwell in Nineveh. And it came to pass, as he was worshipping in the house of Nisroch, his god, that his two sons came and smote him with a sword, and they escaped into the land of Armenia. And Ashurhadon, his son, reigned in his stead. But you see how Hezekiah handled the problem. Remember the state of the nation that we went through this morning. The nation had been a mess. He'd gone in, they were under the constant threat from Assyria. They had suffered defeats left, right and centre. Everybody had attacked them and taken their chunk out of the nation. But Hezekiah stopped. He cleaned up the temple. He reinstituted the holy days. He got rid of the pagan altars. In short, he got rid of the whole false religious system and reestablished the worship of the one true God. Has that not been done in this age? If you look at some of the beliefs of the original group that we belong to now, does that not tie in with this, but perfectly? They've gone directly against the way of God. Then, when problems arose, he took them to God and he went straight to the house of God. Now, we have that privilege. Jesus Christ said, whatever you ask the Father in my name, he'll do it. We've got to have the confidence to realize that he will. Now, he might not do it straight away. He might let that grass lie on the field for 2 months. Adele is nodding. But eventually the grass is all in, all built up, ready for the winter. He asked help from God's servants, and he even sent the high priest to Isaiah the prophet, because at that time, that man was the man. He was God's servant. And God heard, and God answered, and he answered in a very dramatic way. Now, if we want that kind of relationship with God, then that's the attitude that we need to have. Because we're going into a difficult time. We will be taken out of, it appears, just before our nations are taken into captivity. What happens if we've got to put out a message like Jeremiah put out? Jeremiah had to say to the people, there's an army coming, and they're going to surround this city. And when you see them coming, you'll pack your goods, and you go out to meet them and surrender. And they will take you back to their nation, and there you'll be in captivity for 70 years, but then you will return to the land. If you stay in the city, you will die. That's called treason. And they stuck him down a cesspit. And if it hadn't been for the king, they'd have killed him. But that's a tough message to deliver. But you see, they went into captivity, didn't they? And Jeremiah survived, didn't he, to do the job that God gave him. So we now have an opportunity to demonstrate the fact that we want to obey God. And God will be pleased, because for the last 6,000 years, his feast days, his way of life, have been not been kept, with very, very few exceptions. Let's turn to Deuteronomy 16:16. We always read this. Deuteronomy 16, verse 16. This is not a suggestion, as some people would have it. And people have even questioned this. Oh, we don't really need to do this today. This is a direct commandment from God. And if we're back on track, this is what Mr. Armstrong introduced, or God introduced into the church again through Mr. Armstrong. 3 times a year shall all your males appear before the Lord your God in the place that he shall choose, in the feast of unleavened bread, in the feast of weeks or Pentecost, and the feast of tabernacles. And they shall not appear before the eternal empty. Every man shall give as he is able, according to the blessings of the eternal, the Lord your God, which he has given you. Does it say how much? It says, as God has blessed you. I would put it to you that none of us can actually afford to fulfill that. If you look at the tremendous blessings that we have been given, we know what's going to happen in the near future. We know what's going to happen in the middle distance for the next 1,000 years or so. We know what's going to happen. Got a pretty good idea. We've got just an inkling as to what's going to happen beyond that. It's just too fantastic for words. It's so phenomenal, God just couldn't explain it to us because our puny minds couldn't understand it. But we know it's going to happen. So let's take up the offering and realize that in doing so, not only are we obeying God, but we are pleasing him. Now, while the offering is being taken up, the trio will sing the words of King David, "In Judah our God is known," accompanied by Mr. Bowles, who also wrote the music.